Welcome to the Athletic NBA Show,
Monday through
on the Athletic Podcast Network.
From the Golden Gate to the New York Bay.
What I have access to is a bit different than the public.
Tamper with you.
Welcome to Tampering.
For this beautiful game of basketball that we all love and talk about every single day.
With Sam Hamm, Anthony Slater, and Fred Katz.
To be able to bring people together.
Reportedly at the center of an NBA investigation
into tampering accusations.
And the message to executives in the league is
stop talking about players on other teams.
What did I do?
The charges filed.
Impermissible contact.
Was it right or wrong?
Tampering charges are really difficult to prove.
You know me, I talk.
Kind of awkward to even talk about it. I can't even mention teams anymore.
Ask me what I like to play with Kevin Durant.
Try all you want with tampering.
They're always ahead of the rules.
It's not rocket science.
Hey, baby, you know,
I tamper with the guys.
I didn't tamper. I'm just telling you what happened. I'm just telling you what happened.
Here's your host, Sam
Amick. Hello and welcome to the Tampering Podcast, part of the Athletic NBA Show Network. I'm Sam Amick, NBA national writer at The Athletic, here with one of our usual suspects, Mr. Anthony Slater. If you're on the YouTube channel watching this fine production, you'll see that we are rocking the Athletic jersey today, looking like company men. Man, no Fred Katz this week.
This is like showing up at school and... You know, you got the same outfit. You're like, gosh, which one of us is going home? One of us.
All right, fine. Just to make you feel a little better, even in your like disheveled morning state, you know, the hair is always going to like set you apart. You have the distinct hair just like that. So distinct that that guy, the hype man in OKC, tried to steal your look. If anybody's
not
watched
OKC,
Thunder
you're
games.
Talking, no, it's
oh,
Memphis.
Yeah. League pass people know who we're talking about. But Slater's hair is always a thing. Looking good this morning. All right. We have no Fred Katz, but you know who we do have? A show favorite, a favorite in general, in life in general, a man who is actually chilling on the West Coast for one.
You want me to finish that intro? I mean, Sam Amick cuts out right there. Still can't hear him. Just replug and plug
Sam
your mic.
Sam Amick should not hit the mute button on his mic like a rookie here. Man, Will, I'm hyping you up, and then I drop the ball. Kind of like Draymond and the Warriors last night. Ooh, shots fired.
Oh, wow.
Will
but
Guillory.
No, I'm feeling good. I'm just mad I didn't wear the athletic uniform. Y'all are talking about coming rocking the same fitness school. I feel like we all supposed to come up here with our athletic hoodie on, but it's all right. I'll try to keep
you're
up
right.
with
Will,
you guys.
You're right. You should be a little worried. This is probably the pod where, like, let's be real, like the higher-ups and the managers are going to be like, why is Will not on board? Like, what's going on with Will Guillory? You know, doesn't even rock the jersey?
Well, for the record, higher-ups, I don't have that hoodie that Sam Amick has. So I'm not quite on his level yet. So if I did have it, I probably would be rocking it right now.
Man, it's so good to see your face. This is one of those pods, and we're going to do a little bit of a light version this week. We are all on the run in terms of time. But one of those pods where it is not really hard to figure out the type of stuff we're going to talk about, guys, because, you know, that's always the case late in season. We have plenty to dive into. This year in particular is just off the tracks in the best kind of way, particularly in the Western Conference. And so to give the listeners a quick sense of what we're going to get into on this week's Tampering Pod that I will loosely frame as kind of capturing the late season chaos, Slater and I were at the Warriors-Minnesota game last night with playoff standings and stakes, you know, in play. Where the Warriors blow things late against Minnesota. The T-Wolves obviously got Karl Anthony Towns back, figuring out all their big lineups. Anthony Edwards returned last night as well. So the Warriors drop a tough game after beating Philly and starting to look good again. We'll talk about that a little bit. The Lakers get LeBron James back. You would think that'd be a great thing. Did not get the job done against the Bulls. So I want to dive into the Lakers situation a little bit. But naturally, with our guy Will here, we got to make sure we talk about the Pels, still no Zion Williamson, but they are playing well of late, and like everybody else in the West, fighting for playoff position. And if we have time, Mr. Schlecht, our super producer, is going to join us for a couple quick minutes on OKC, which is not getting enough love and just deserves some shine with young Shai Gilgeous-Alexander killing. Guys, let's start just because it's top of mind and fresh, and it was last night. Slater, you know, I made the drive like you did to that Warriors game. Looked for most of the night. Like, well, they were trailing a lot, and you know, Minnesota was doing their thing, and but they blow it again, and to do it at home where they've been playing well of late. Just go big picture for me. They get Gary Payton the second back. You know, he had some good moments like you wrote today. But a tough loss for a team that just continues to, every time they peek their head out and look like the champs again a little bit, something like this happens.
Yeah, I mean, they've had a handful of these late in games this season where they've literally just given the game away. I mean, I don't know if you guys remember when they were in Utah and they had like a 4-point lead with 7 seconds left and found a way to lose that game, which was like, you know, when they do the models of like percent chance that you're going to win the game at that point, you know, it's like 99.9 or something.
105.
Like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Basically, last night it might not have been quite that high, but you have the ball. 24 seconds left with 21 on the shot clock. They're going to foul. You have two, you know, you literally have the number one and number two free throw shooters in the NBA last season. You should close that game out. They do close that game out. I remember a stat earlier this season after they blew another one of these in Charlotte where Draymond post game said they had a 4-point lead in the final minute and they lost it. And Draymond literally said, I don't think we've blown more than two or three of these over the whole dynasty run where we have a 4-point lead in the final minute. I went back and looked at the stat. It was like 3 in 7 years or something like that. They've probably done that 3 to 4 times a season now at this point. And I mean, we know what the standings looks like. Let's say those are 3 wins. Like, you know, you're in like 4th in the West, like at this stage. And now because you give away something like that, like if they win that game last night, if Draymond doesn't just throw it away and Towns hits the 3, then they're 2.5 up on Minnesota and they have the tiebreaker. And then if they beat the Pelicans Tuesday night, which maybe we'll get into the stakes of that game.
For sure,
they pretty much clinch themselves out of the play-in. But because they lost that game, probably now lose the tiebreaker to Minnesota because of conference record. They're in very much danger. And we're now sitting there looking at, for the Warriors, it's a 6-game season. I think a few teams have 7 left, but there's a 2-week stretch here where everything's on the line, right? The Warriors could be in the 9-10 play-in with their season on the line 2 weeks from now, or if they win a couple, they could be home court. They could be the 4 in a 4-5 series against Phoenix or the Clippers. It's pretty crazy.
Before I throw it to Will, just a little lighthearted soundbite, or you know, visual sharing from last night. Klay Thompson's press conference cracked me up because in good times when the Warriors win, he's become kind of notorious for making paper airplanes and having a good time with those. You know, it's a great like symbolic thing of his, you know, Klay state of mind, right? Like he makes the airplane, he throws it across the room. Everything's happy, everything's light. Last night, as he got a few tough questions about the game, Klay is eating granola, and I guarantee you popcorn. This was intentional. Was it popcorn?
It was popcorn.
Okay, and then the reason he is biting through the kernel.
Well, so this is, and you can finish your story in a second, but I think what happened was he was eating popcorn, so it wasn't coming through the mic very much, but then he, you know, throws back the bottom of his little popcorn, and you guys know what happens at the bottom of like little popcorn, right?
Right.
That's where it's all the crunch.
Seeds.
Yeah.
All right. It was. You're right.
And he threw popcorn. That all in his mouth, and he just started.
Well, you were there. We were both in the room. Tell me if I read it wrong. I felt like the tougher the question, the more irritated he got by the question, the more intentional he was with his crunching of the popcorn. It was like, you know, Klay, why do the Warriors continue to struggle in late game situations? Crunch. Like, you know, just this audible response before he would, you know,
it seemed to me like he did one crunch that was like kind of not accidental, but you know, he hadn't thought about it, and it made a sound that was like, I didn't like that question. I was like,
exactly.
And then I think he was like, that was like, I liked the way that sounded. So he just got like, it was weird. It was weird.
But Will, let's spin it forward to the game Tuesday night, because you know your team is playing Portland tonight. We obviously on this pod don't know the result of that one yet, but they're playing good ball of late. Is it 4 or 5 right now? They've won. Does that sound right?
Yeah, 4 in a row. So four out of the last 5.
Sure. Yeah, let's get 4 in a row. Sounds better. But
4 or 4. How about that?
4 or 4. they are a perfect basketball team. But, you know, another high-stakes game against the Warriors. But between that game and even bigger picture, you know, I wrote a couple of weeks ago that, or maybe a week ago, that, you know, the Pelicans still expected, or at least were, you know, hopeful, optimistic, whatever you want to say, of getting Zion back before the playoffs if they were able to make them. Maybe that's not the case anymore. I know they had an update the other day. Just, you know, what's going on with your team? And also, you know, Trey Murphy playing some pretty good ball. They're doing well lately.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm still very pessimistic, but I, you know, everybody I talk to within the organization, they still feel very strongly that Zion is going to be back at some point this season. The reevaluation date is going to leave him probably about maybe 3 games to come back, maybe 2 to come back before the end of the regular season. So he's going to be pushing it there. But, you know, I see him, you know, doing his work on the side all the time. I went to practice the other day and he walked out, you know, in a full sweat. So he seems like he's putting in the work, trying to get himself right. I don't know if he's doing very much, you know, on court stuff. I know the team cleared him to do some on court stuff. I don't think he's like playing 5-on-5 or anything like that. So he's still got a long way to go. But I mean, this team is feeling really good about themselves. And, you know, they went through that really tough stretch where they got destroyed by the Lakers at home. They lost that really ugly game. You talk about giving away games at the end. They gave away a game to the Rockets in Houston. And, you know, that was a point in the season where it really could have went bad for them. And I asked them about that after the Clippers game. And they were just like, we had to sit behind the scenes and have some real, you know, tough conversations with each other. They had to make some adjustments in the way they're playing. And now, you know, they're flying high. They're feeling really good about themselves. And you mentioned that they got some really big games coming up on this West Coast road trip. And if they can come out, you know, maybe 2-2 on this trip, maybe even 3-1, they're going to be feeling really good with a bunch of home games left on the schedule. And of course, you know, a massive game against Minnesota in the season finale, which feels like it's going to determine a whole lot, you know, in this playing race.
Big picture, and this is, you know, you got one of those teams you cover that we are definitely guilty nationally of losing track of for long periods of time, if that makes sense. Like, for me, I feel like I got a good pulse on most situations in the league, and then New Orleans comes through town, and I'm like, damn, I don't really have a great feel for this. Meaning, like, how to unpack even this season from a big picture standpoint. Okay, Zion and his injury history is well chronicled at this point. So how much, if any, culpability going forward is the front office going to feel in terms of, you know, Dave Griffin and his future, the coaching side of things, so in terms of just the mood in the Pelicans room and how they are evaluating things from ownership on down during this season, where, as we remember early on when they were at their best, they were third in the West and we thought they were going to be a team that was fighting for home court. But injuries are injuries and they've had a slew of them. You know, how do you kind of differentiate that as far as how the analysis is, if that makes sense?
Yeah, it's just really tough because, like you said, I mean, when they were mostly healthy, they were one of the best teams in the league. When Zion and B, I always post a number, when Zion, B.I. and CJ play together, they're like a plus 10 net rating. They just destroy teams when those guys play together, but they've only played like 10 games together the whole season. And I think it took them a while to really figure out what their identity was going to be without Zion. And then, you know, getting B.I. back from a long injury stint, it took him a while to start feeling like himself again. And I think, you know, after, like I said, after that Lakers loss and that Bulls loss, they really adjusted their identity again. And now they're running everything through Brandon Ingram. His usage is through the roof. He's got back-to-back games with 30 points and 10 assists. They're leaning heavily on Trey Murphy. He's looking like, you know, a 6'10 Klay Thompson out there. The way he shoot the ball, had 10 threes the last game. And it feels like they just really know how to win now with this group. They got a better feeling on how they should be playing. They're leaning more into Jonas Valanciunas. And I think now they're kind of starting feeling like, hey, we did this last year, right? Where we got healthy, we got hot right around the playing time. We know who Brandon Ingram is. We know Willie Green's a good coach. And they're feeling like, hey, if we can get in to this last stretch of games playing well, playing confidently, then they feel pretty good about whoever they end up getting matched up with in a potential playing scenario. And they look at it as, hey, we've been here. We know what it's like. And if we're playing the way we should be playing, they can compete with pretty much anybody.
Stay in that play-in from last year. And correct me if I'm wrong. Like, Zion was almost able to come back right around the play-in. And then even I remember in that first round Pelican Sun series, like, they made it clear he wasn't coming back, but like, physically, wasn't he like basically there?
Oh, if you ask Zion, he could have played. He wanted to play. He was desperate to play. I mean, if you remember, he posted the clip of him, you know, throwing down a between the legs dunk in the practice facility. That was him kind of sending the shot to the world, like, hey, y'all, I'm ready to play.
They're holding me back, kind of thing. Right?
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
So and I think I asked that because it was clearly at a time where they were really, you know, concerned about getting his body right, but also he was about to, you know, sign the contract. He signed now. You're a year later in this, you know, Zion run. He is, again, like coming right up to where he might physically be ready right around the play-in playoffs. Do you feel like this season there will be more urgency and more willingness from the organization to push him back on the court? Obviously, I would assume he's going to want to play in the biggest, you know, stage in the sport. But do you think they will be more less cautious, I would say?
Yeah, I think so. Just because last year, the difference was he hadn't played at all, right? He played zero games during the regular season. He hadn't played basically since the previous season, the empty arena season, you know. So I think this year he hasn't played since January. So he's been out, you know, a much shorter period of time. And I think, you know, coming back from a hamstring is different from coming back from a broken foot. I feel like, of course, there's some re-injury risk with a hamstring, but it's not as scary as coming back from a broken foot. So I think, they're not going to be as cautious. They really want to get him out there. And I think after that experience last year, they're going to be less likely to kind of have that fight with him over sitting him out in playoff games. Because I think that was the big thing for Zion. He was like, man, I just want to play in the playoffs. I want to feel these environments. I want to be in front of these crazy crowds and, you know, sitting on the side. I know that really, you know, that messed with him mentally. And that's something that he's talked about a good bit, about just how much of a mental struggle last year was for him sitting out and watching all of that. And I know he really wants to get back this year and try to make an impact. Because the other thing is, when you look around the West, man, if they get a healthy Zion Williamson back, this team can make some noise in the West. If they get the right matchup, they could be a scary team if they're finally healthy and they're playing confidently going into the playoffs. So, yeah, they're going to want to get him back. They're much more open to putting him on the floor this year than they were last year. And they feel internally if they can get healthy, they can do some stuff, you know, once we get to April.
Look, nobody's that good, so everybody's dangerous. It's weird how the West.
Well, I was going to say, and that's kind of a perfect place to segue there. Will that sentiment that you just captured, like, let's have a little fun here and go through the West standings and figure out how many teams have that vibe. You know what I mean? And that's what's crazy about the West this year. And with all due respect to the East, we're obviously not going to go East that much today. But the reason is, if you look at those East standings, we know who's elite. You know, it's Milwaukee, Boston, Philly, Cleveland. New York's fallen off a bit. But there is a clear delineation between, you know, the haves and the have-nots in the East. In the West, you know, we all are guilty of continuing to look at Denver and say, okay, very, very good team. But because of the playoff history, we doubt them. That is what it is. They have to change that narrative. The game last night, Minnesota beats the Warriors. Guess what? They had the same vibe that you're talking about in New Orleans. The question I want to throw to you guys within that vein is, if you look at the West and all the parity and all the teams crunched together, you know, what team or two teams do you think, if you essentially say, you look up and it's the Western Conference Finals and there's a team there that we did not expect to be there, you know, who are you handicapping? Because it does feel like that's something that we might be seeing in a couple of months.
I mean, I think the one that nobody's predicting right now that could sit there and go, like, look at our profile, why does nobody think we have a chance, is the Kings, right? I mean, like, they're one of the – they are maybe the most consistent team in the West in the last couple of months. And their offense, you know, profiles as extremely elite. Now, maybe they get to the playoffs, they, you know, get slowed down, they, you know, people can kind of maybe be a little bit more physical with them. But that's a team, I think, that, you know, they're gonna have home court in the first round. They're, you know,
Memphis, obviously, too, is, sorry to jump in, I mean, Memphis is in that Denver class. We all the drama with them has kind of compelled
us.
Well,
Memphis wouldn't surprise you. We're trying to,
yes,
are we predicting they might surprise?
Yes, you're right. No, the Kings are a good one. Continue.
I don't think the Suns are in the surprise category. We could all see that.
That one is, I mean, I'm going to write something on them this week. And I mean, you're right. They fill their own lane, but it is a historically unique lane, you know, and I'm going to get into some of this stuff. Like Clyde Drexler going to Houston is widely considered back in the day, like, you know, one of the only midseason trades that that paid off and you know, led to great things. You know, Wilt Chamberlain got traded mid-season to the Lakers, you know, and they lost, I think, second round in those playoffs. But we typically don't see mid-season trades pay off. This is well beyond that. This is not just a Kevin Durant
Rashid
trade.
In there, too, to Detroit.
Right, Rashid to Detroit. But Durant came and then got hurt. And I talked to Devin Booker and Chris Paul about this the other day. If you talk about a player of that magnitude and a guy who was shown through his Warriors days, you know, through his OKC days, like an ability to play well with all kinds of different other stars, like he's probably one of the best plug-and-play superstars that the league has. And so they might not even need that much of a run-up heading into the playoffs, but they're only going to get a couple of games with Kevin Durant. You know, he's coming back Wednesday, I believe, so a couple days from now.
If they went on a finals run, he would have played something like 20 playoff games and like seven regular season games for the franchise ever. Like, right. Let's say they went on a – so, like, yeah, that would be pretty unprecedented, right?
100%. So, I mean, yeah, there are dangerous teams in the West. Not trying to say there's not. But, yeah, once you get past Denver, Memphis, Phoenix, and the lane it fills, the Kings are a good one. You know, but,
I mean,
but
look, Warriors are, you know, until they're dead, they are thought of as a theoretical threat.
Even the Lakers thing, I know in the media we're guilty of obsessing over the Lakers, but it did crack me up that it's like they win a few games, you know, post-trade deadline, their moves have been paying off pretty well. They have better depth. They're top defense in the league, you know, after they got their new pieces. And so you could almost sense like the media hype machine on the Lakers building and people going, okay, now LeBron comes back. Well, clearly that's just going to take him to the next level. Well, here comes Pat Bev and his new Chicago Bulls team to smack him around a little bit and kind of, you know, put them back where they've been most of the season. So the Lakers thing, certainly it's just one game with that group with LeBron. That did not look like your surprise team at all going forward. And I'm not even saying like that a Minnesota is, but it was funny to be in their locker room last night and hear this wild confidence from Karl-Anthony Towns and Rudy Gobert that may or may not have been trolled a little bit on our Athletic NBA Show group podcast. Although I'm snitching, I should
listen, man. I love Carl, but he leads the league in cringe quotes, man. Carl, God, I just wish
what movies are made of. Will, it's what movies are made of.
Is that what he said post game?
He said it after his first game back when he hit two free throws.
That interview was something.
I might have yesterday joked that it should have been. That's what B movies are made of. That's what B movies are made
of. Last night his comment was he's got to come through in the clutch because that's what he gets paid to do. That's what he gets paid to do is come through in the clutch.
But Will, he's not lying. But there's something
about the playoffs
about
last year when he did not come through in the clutch several times. Right. So I get it. He wants to be better than he was last year. But again, Carl, man, cut the cringe comments out, man. You're killing me.
He will not be cutting them out.
They were delivered, let me add, Will, in case you didn't see the video, they were delivered with sunglasses indoors as well. I did not see that. Yeah.
But no, I mean, I really...
But it's not just him, Rudy. I get along with Rudy. Rudy had a line about how we've got bigs who can get out and guard on the perimeter. It's like, damn. Okay. You know? But this is the season in the West. Everybody still feels like they got a shot.
No, we said it. Everybody in the West feels like they've got a chance. That it's wide open just because everything we said. Phoenix with the injuries. Memphis has their drama going on, plus injuries. Denver, we're just, you know, everybody just kind of tossed them to the side, even though they've been the one seed basically the entire season. So I think everybody, once the playoff seeding finally gets settled, a lot of these teams are going to feel like they got a chance. And we know what the Warriors, they're like Jason, you know, you never feel like they're done. You can you can blow up the building. You can set them on fire. Even last night after they blew the lead, Carl hits the three. Steph throws up that one hand three pointer from the corner. And in my head, I'm like, oh, yeah, this is going in. Because that's just the Warriors. They find a way to just make some type of magical thing happen. So you feel like it's going to happen until it doesn't. But I just think, you know, when I look at Minnesota, I as much as I've on these pods, I've made fun of them all year for the Gobert trade. I still don't love the Towns plus Gobert fit. But when you watch them play and the size they can put on the court at all positions, that they can be really dangerous if you catch them in the right matchup. Like last night, watching them against the Warriors just look really small against them in certain matchups. When you got like McDaniels guarding Jordan Poole, and you got Taurean Prince and some of these guys chasing around Steph. It feels
Edwards is a pretty good defender too. You know, when he's engaged, for sure. And he's typically engaged.
Slow-mo is super underrated. He made a big deal. I think he's been excellent for them this year. So yeah, I think that's a team if they catch the right matchup and they put all that size. And we got to shout out Naz Reid too. I mean, that man. He's having an incredible season. Averaging 19 a game over the last six. They're playing these double big lineups with him and Gobert, him and Cat. You know, I just think that they throw out a ton of size, a ton of skill. And, you know, if you catch them on the wrong night, they're a very dangerous team. And it feels like there are a lot of teams in the West we could say that about.
How about that final score last night? I mean, 98-96 in 2023? I mean, that's a third quarter score.
Right.
I agree.
Golden State, too. You know, what was the last time Golden State got held to 96 points?
41 second half points for the Warriors. They could be tricky on a particular night, especially now that they're healthy. But, you know, I think we all agree they're going to probably get in the wrong playoff matchup. They're going to be, you know, played to a point where they can only have one big on the floor, and then, you know, the house of card kind of crumbles. That's what I think. I think that's probably what we all think. But, yeah, they're intriguing, at least.
Before we go to our next topic, we're going to get a break here in a moment, but I always like kind of sharing lighter moments from the locker room. We talked about the Klay Thompson press conference. One thing last night I did not anticipate or expect happening is young Anthony Edwards, who I don't really know. I think I met him before. I said hello yesterday for a quick minute. Excuse me. What I didn't expect is he does his media. And by all accounts in their locker room, he's just a really good-spirited guy. And I think culturally for their group, that's going to be great. By all accounts in their locker room, he's got a great personality, positive guy, joyful guy, and his spirit, I think, is appreciated and you know, great for their locker room. So he does his media, and he's happy because he's back, and they won the game and everything. And he was very excited to get to Sacramento, which is not something that a lot of opposing players say. Because true to form, because this has been a thing this year, this season, is that Ant likes some of his different foods, right? Well, there's some wings apparently up in Sacramento, and I'm the guy who lives up here. I did not expect to be getting like restaurant recommendations from Anthony Edwards. He was telling one of the beat guys, Chris Hine, who does a great job, like, Chris, these wings up in Sac, you know, I think it's Fire Wings. We'll give him a free shout out on the pod. Actually, you know, that's the name of the restaurant, Fire Wings. He's looking on his phone. He's just like, they're up, you know, they're open till 2 a.m. I'm assuming he's going to get, you know, Uber Eats, something like that. But he was fired up to get to Sac and get the best wings out there, apparently. But they had a good vibe, and we'll see what they can do. All right, on the other side
I know he's also said, I think he went on an Austin Rivers podcast, he said the Road Arena he likes most is Sac because he always like lights up the rim. He feels like he can't miss in Sac. So we will see. They're playing tonight. Big game. Kings trying to make
the play. I know. I would hype that game, except that the pod can't account for it. But it will be interesting because they could spoil the Kings party again. They made them hold off on the playoff clinching last night. They could do it again tonight, but obviously can't really have that talk. Let's have a little OKC discussion on the other side of the break. We're going to welcome in our OKC-based super producer, Andrew Schlecht, to talk all things Thunder. We'll be right back.
I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers?
That's a butterfly effect for real.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Are you struggling to close deals? B2B selling is tougher than ever, and that's why I want to tell you about LinkedIn Sales Navigator. LinkedIn Sales Navigator is a sales intelligence platform that helps professionals effectively prospect and engage high-value customers, drive higher revenue, and increase sales performance. Sales Navigator helps you target the right buyers, surface key signals, and show you hidden allies so that you can find those buyers that are most likely to convert. Fueled by LinkedIn's 1 billion member platform, Sales Navigator gives you the most up-to-date, first-party data, enabling you to unlock conversations with people that matter. Right now, you can try LinkedIn Sales Navigator and get a 60-day free trial at linkedin.com/NBAshow23. That's linkedin.com/NBAshow23 for a 60-day free trial. Let LinkedIn Sales Navigator help you sell like a superstar today. Just go to linkedin.com/NBAshow23 and get started. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
All right, gentlemen. I'm very guilty this season on the pod of not giving enough love to the Thunder, and we need to correct that a little bit at this moment.
He tried to trade Shai Gilgeous-Alexander in November.
It's true.
Wow.
It's true.
I sure
wow.
do.
This yeah. man. No.
Wow.
I do love, though, like jokes aside, from a reporting standpoint, when you, before I throw it to you, Andrew, like mm-hmm. when you learn things, when the Thunder and the Clippers did their Paul George trade, and this is not, no one's rewriting history. Like in the moment, the Clippers like openly told reporters who were asking about their analysis of the trade, they admitted that like, we really, really wish we didn't have to give up Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. That, and you know, from Jerry West, obviously the guru who works with the Clippers as a consultant, you know, on down to their front office, they knew he was going to be good. Now, if they knew he was going to be this good, they don't do the deal. Because you could, I mean, they're in a better spot than the Clippers, you could argue at the moment in terms of like momentum and vibe right now when it matters most. They have won 9 out of 13 games. Shai in particular is just not, I mean, beyond balling out. These are MVP caliber numbers. There's only, what is it, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 guys in the league, him being one, averaging at least 31 points and 4 rebounds a game. Might have heard of these guys: Joel Embiid, Luka Doncic, Giannis Antetokounmpo, and Damian Lillard, and then Shai. Andrew, you've been there kind of front row all season like you have been the last few years. You know, what's it been like? What are you thinking, and how good is this team?
I think they're a good team. I think their defense has been probably been the most surprising thing, is that they're a top 10 defensive team at the moment. And a lot of that is just through scheme. They don't let teams play in transition, and they try to play super fast themselves. They have no big men, essentially. I mean, they have backup bigs that are playing starting position. They'll close games sometimes with Josh Giddey as their biggest player, and they just swarm in the paint. You'd think like a guy like Jonas Valanciunas could like feast on the Thunder. Well, the Thunder have taken it out of his hands every single time. He gets like 1 or 2 post-ups a game just because they swarm this guy. So they're good. Now, how good are they, I think, is a question, because the rest of the West has been falling apart all around them. And so they have stayed in the mix, certainly. But they definitely have some pieces that they're missing. Like they're missing Kenrich Williams. I think that a guy like that would make a pretty big difference for them right now. But it really is all about Shai. I mean, the jump that he's made just in points per game has been ridiculous. And to me, the biggest difference between Shai last year and this year, or even 2 years ago, is just defensively, he's just different. He cares. You can tell that he's scouting the next team really well, and that he wants to play against the best players, and he wants to match up with them. He did that against Devin Booker the other night in Oklahoma City, and he wants to see how he measures up. And right now he leads all guards and steals and blocks in the NBA. And he's been really impressive. Now, he did turn his ankle last night in Portland. He played through it, but like as we know, you'll know more today about that ankle than you do last night about it. So that could be a
really
pretty big
one. Schedule coming up though, right? It's like Hornets, Pistons, somebody.
They have it's Hornets, Pistons, back to back in OKC, and then they have Pacers on Friday. So yes, it's about as light as it gets. But ask the Mavericks what that's like. You know, these teams are still frisky. And the thing is, and Mark Degnan was talking about it last night.
I think that's a little bit more about the Mavericks than the Hornets.
It could be. But the thing about these teams,
you can be beaten. You're right.
Yeah, these teams at the end of the season, they're playing with these players that are fighting for their NBA lives. And so you can't just mail it in. And that's what I think the Mavs did, like especially defensively. They just mailed it in.
Luka Doncic is the mailman right now.
Yeah. the Thunder have mailed it in, too, this season, though. The Thunder lost to Charlotte earlier this season in Charlotte. And it was one of those, like, all right, you got to go to Charlotte and win this game. And so you wonder. I mean, if they can win these next three games, like the Thunder are going to make the play-in. Like, that's going to happen. And that's a pretty crazy statement to make. I thought by now they would have been the team tanking in Portland and that Portland would be going for, you know, the 10th seed, and it's the other way around.
You guys, I mean, Slater alluded to it earlier. I just got to take a few minutes to, you know, just own. We got to own our mistakes in this business, right? Like, we spend a lot of time flexing when we get something right. I did write that Shai Gilgeous-Alexander was a guy that was being monitored, and that part's true.
Yeah.
That other teams were watching his situation closely. But the entire premise was clearly faulty, which the premise was that they're going to be so bad again that people are going to wonder how long he's willing to put up with it. Andrew, of course, had already beaten me to the punch and was like, well, Sam, I tell you what, why don't I sit down with the man himself and ask him? And you had a good interview with Shai where he expressed patience and expressed confidence. But to see it bear out in this kind of a way, I certainly didn't see coming, and we didn't even talk about Jalen Williams with an EN that, you know, is now in the rookie of the year discussion.
Yep.
I think he's going to get some love there. Mark Daigneault, you know, is going to get
Daigneault. I got to stop you. Daigneault. Everybody says it wrong because the broadcast says it wrong. Everybody does it. The broadcast is.
Thank you for blaming them. It's not my fault.
No. This is the broadcast's fault. Everybody does it on the broadcast, even though he himself says it's Daigneault. It's like, come on. It's going to continue to be a big problem, but Daigneault.
Understood. But it speaks to the lack of respect. We can't even respect the coach. Come on, man.
His own home broadcast doesn't respect the coach.
Right. I know. It's crazy. You mentioned Jalen Williams, and he's been one of the reasons why they've been able to be this good, is that he can fill in whatever position you want him to. He'll play backup point guard for them. He'll play on the wing most of the time. And he'll play small ball center. And he's pretty good defensively, but offensively, he cuts really well off ball. He can handle on ball. He'll set screens. I mean, he'll do pretty much everything. And he's crazy efficient. He's shooting 70% in the restricted area this year, which is just ridiculous for a player that plays on the wing. So, yeah, he's been a big part of it.
And kind of the thing that's been the front of mind for me is like we've talked about, Shai hasn't just been a great player. He hasn't just been a great scorer. I think he's been a great leader for that team. And he's kind of embraced being the guy with the C on his chest for that team, a team full of young guys. But I think kind of at the front of mind for me, when I think about what they're going to look like in a potential play-in situation, is when they played the Lakers the other night. And I think the Lakers were really focused at the end of that game of being like, okay, anybody but Shai is going to beat us. We're going to force the ball out of Shai's hands. And I think when I think about them in a do or die situation, Andrew, what do you think is going to look like if a team says, all right, we're removing the ball from Shai's hands and we're going to make some of these other guys beat us? How, you know, comfortable do they feel with Josh Giddey, with one of the Jalen Williams, Lu Dort, making plays in big situations? Because we know Shai is great and he's one of the best fourth quarter players in this league, but in a big game situation where the season's on the line, I can't see one of these teams allowing Shai to take them out in a fourth quarter situation.
Yeah, you don't feel good about really any of these guys right now. They're so young. I mean, Josh Giddey's 20 years old. Jalen Williams is a 21-year-old rookie. Honestly, the guy I think you might feel best about is Isaiah Joe, who's had an amazing season himself. He had 5 threes last night in Portland. Like, if the ball hits his hands and he's open, you feel pretty good about him shooting the ball. Giddy, if he can get himself going to the basket, is good. But I mean, if you're any other team, you're just packing the paint against the Thunder. I mean, like, if you want to beat the Thunder, pack the paint, double Shea, and then like make. And the thing about it right now is like Lugan Stort is their most aggressive offensive player. He's also finishing like 50% at the rim. I mean, he's been really, really bad.
Andrew, since we're doing the like make sure we put some respect on OKC's name,
yeah,
segment today, does Lou prefer Lou or Lugans?
Lou, yeah.
All right, yeah. Fair enough.
Yeah, but when Andrew Dort talks about his shot percentage at the rim, it is Lugans. but you guys remember it would have been the first year of the play-in tournament, the Grizzlies got in as the 9, and then they beat the Spurs in that like 9-10, and then they went to Chase Center and beat the Warriors, surprisingly, and got into the first round and actually won game 1 in Utah against the 1-seed Jazz, and then ended up losing in 5. But that was like the start of what Memphis is becoming now. Mm-hmm. That to me is like where the Thunder are and what this season could be if they like cap it off right, you know. Like, really fight to get in the play-in and really, you know, try to get out of the play-in. Get yourself a first-round series. Try to steal one on the road in a hostile environment. I would say the Thunder parallel to this is the Durant-Westbrook really young Thunder as the 8 seed, getting 2 games from the champion Lakers from Kobe and Powell, and getting a standing ovation at, remember when they lost game 6? Yeah. I'm sure, Andrew.
Yep.
That whole, you know, that was like the origin of that era. I think this season,
last year, the Pels taking 2 off of Phoenix, right?
Yeah, that's a good one. I think this season has the chance to be the one where maybe 3 seasons from now they're contenders, and you go, well, like, we got a lot of chops from that one, you know, playoff series. Yeah, we lost in 5 games, but it taught us a lot. So, I mean, how much organizationally is that like the mission right now?
Yeah, I mean, Pressey talked about this after it was actually right before they traded Westbrook, that they wanted to make an appearance. And not like they wanted to make an arrival, not an appearance in the playoffs. And so they didn't want to just like go get some guys and like try to just sneak into the playoffs. And it's part of why they let that Chris Paul Gallinari team with Steven Adams and all those guys kind of let them go. They want to arrive as a young, threatening team. And I think you're right. I think that it's probably a year ahead of schedule. I think a lot of people would have thought that maybe they'll dip back into the lottery one more time. And that then the following year that they would make this arrival.
Westbrook was a year ahead of time, right? At least
they definitely were. Yeah. Definitely were. Yes.
But don't you think, Andrew? Excuse me. And I'm gonna let you guys keep going after this. I got to bounce. But don't you think that speaks to? I mean, I joke earlier about what I wrote early in the season. To me, around the league, that was why people were monitoring it so much, because if they didn't arrive a year early, the question was like, where would Shea's state of mind be? Let's say they go out and win, you know, 23 games this year. You know, the love that they're going to get is going to help the mood in an incredible kind of way. They're going to have most likely all NBA, you know, presence, coach of the year votes, all defense votes. Mm-hmm. You know, they're going to be represented all across
rookie
the board.
Rookie
of the year, 100%. You know, that.
And Chet Holmgren arriving next season.
Yeah.
You also have that. Yeah, he's warming up before every game, like every road game, and now he's warming up before home games in front of the crowd. And so, yeah, people.
But obviously, that question of Shea and like, can he be patient is behind us. Like, now he's part of an up and coming program.
Yeah, it was a valid question to begin with for people. Of course, you should be monitoring this. He's one of the best young players in the league. He's only 24 years old. If there's no guarantee that the Thunder are going to get this thing off the ground, I mean, if Josh Giddey has made a leap. We didn't know how good Jalen Williams was, especially with Chet going down. It's like, okay, now like, what is this team really? And they've unearthed some guys. I think Kenrich Williams being as good as he is, I think helps. I think Dort being as stout as he is on defense helps. But it's really about Shea's emergence, Jalen Williams, and then Josh Giddey has been better. He's been better shooting the ball. He's been better as a scorer. You know, there's a lot of ways that he's improved.
Yeah, we also didn't know how good Shea was. You know, I think part of the reason I think that he was considered on the block is I think it was like, yeah, you know, he's nice for the Thunder, but he's kind of like maybe a 2 or a 3 on a team.
Right.
Get him elsewhere to, you know, if he's in, you know, if it's, you know, in New York, let's say, you know, as part of that, like Jalen Brunson, Julius Randle core, okay, yeah, that would make a lot of sense. But he has shown, like, no, I can be like the 1A on this Thunder team. So it's to the point he has played. So forget all the other guys that are playing so well below him. It's like, why would you give up that type of talent?
Yeah, I don't think even the most optimistic OKC fan would have considered him a potential first team all NBA guy.
Which MVP is votes. A legit I bet he gets some like fifth place MVP votes. I mean, Will, I don't know if you would put him in that category.
Yeah, I think he's right in the conversation for sure. He's right there. And I think he's definitely right there for first team all NBA. And again, it speaks to not only just his play, but his leadership for that team. And there's no way they're supposed to be where they are right now. And that's, you know, mostly because of Shea and the way he carries them night in and night out with the scoring and the way, you know, he comes up in these clutch situations. We mentioned all the awards. He's going to get some votes for, what is it, the Jerry West clutch player of the year. He's going to be up there for that trophy. Is that award going to
be
hyped?
Is that, like, are you guys going to be like, oh, wow, like, who's going to win?
I just want the pick of, like, remember the pick of Russell Westbrook looking over KD's shoulder at the MVP? Yeah. I want Shea to get the trophy, and I want Jalen Williams over his shoulder looking to be like, I'm going to be the clutch player of the year one day.
Yeah. Yeah, the leap that Shea made is pretty insane. I mean, he went from 24 points per game to 31. And that's a hard leap to make. And I know that a lot of people may say, okay, well, this is the year where everybody's scoring 30. Well, it's only six guys, and the company that he's in is pretty elite. Sam mentioned it earlier. One of the big things to get him there is just the free throws. I mean, he's shooting 10 free throws a game at 90%. And that has been a part of the leap. I mean, that's an extra 3 points there. And then it's just him getting to the basket and just finishing with crazy efficiency.
I mean, Andrew, when you watch him, he is relentless. He just goes downhill every single play. It's nonstop. When I watch him, it reminds me of Zion, just the way you know exactly what he wants to do. You know he's trying to get to the rim, and you still can't stop him. He's so physical. He knows how to use his body. He knows how to get fouled when he's getting in. He just doesn't stop. And we've seen, you know, for a few years where he'll settle for some of those step back threes, or he'll pivot and shoot a fadeaway. But this year, he's just putting his head down and just going directly at defenses. And it's impressive just how he just doesn't stop. He just keeps coming at you. And that's a big part of the jump he's made this year
He also does it in like a non-fatiguing style. You know, he's not, I mean, you know, then that franchise knows with Westbrook, the way it was just like relentless downhill. Not only, you know, are you potentially tiring yourself out as you're doing it, but you know, how many crashing missed layups, and this is not just a Russell Westbrook thing. This is Ja Morant. Name your downhill guard, even Zion at times. You're kind of falling into the stanchion, and then it's 5-on-4 the other way if you miss it. Andrew mentioned their transition defense. I think part of that is like, you know, Shea. Like, when is Shea like crashing into like the, you know, photo bin at, you know, because he's going into the rim like that? Nah, he's always kind of under control, and then he can get back. I think that matters too.
Yeah.
You know, you mentioned his leadership too. I think Sam Amick could learn a little thing from that. You know, he dips out. He's forcing us to close. I guess I'm going to have to close out this podcast.
Sam not going to get clutch player of the year. That's for sure. No. He's not closing it out in the fourth.
But yeah, no, we will talk to you next week. How far away are the playoffs now at this point? Like 2.5 weeks, play-ins like 2 weeks away, man. Essentially.
It's right there. Yeah. It's crazy.
Yeah. And yeah, I mean, the West has a mini, like, it feels a little March Madness-y coming up for the West. You know, it's like that again, this Warriors Pelicans game on Tuesday night, like massive seeding stakes. Just last week, Warriors Mavericks felt like winners, the probable sixth seed. Warriors win that game. Mavericks tailspin. Now it's like, are Mavericks going to be 11th in the West? Like, are the Mavericks even going to make the play-in? I don't know. So, all right, I'm rambling on. We will talk to you all next week where we'll probably have a little bit more sorted out in the West. Maybe we won't heading into the final four.
No chance.
I think it's going to come down to the final day. It's really going to come down to the final day, and that's when we're going to figure it all out.
Well, I think the Warriors would take that because they're in Portland on the final day, and I think Portland is just shoveling wins to people right now at this point. So, we will talk to you again next week.